A view glides past a car in an otherwise empty parking structure. A closer view lingers on the car, a black luxury sedan. The perspective travels around the car's back end, revealing a Florida license plate. The car appears in profile, accompanied by a title, Transporter 2. The number 2 flickers vertically, like yellow lines on a roadway. A view from the front end passes along the car's sleek styling and gleaming chrome grille. Behind the wheel sits Frank Martin, his features set in an inscrutable expression. He checks his wristwatch, showing about 10 minutes to 3. Wearing black driving gloves, he activates a console control. A display reading locked flips up from the dashboard. Someone knocks on the driver's window. Seeing a smiling woman, he lowers it.
I'm so sorry. Can you help me? My tire.
Sorry, I have an appointment. I don't like to be late.
Well, would you rather be late or dead?
She puts a gun to his head.
You don't want to do this.
Step out of the car.
Frank unlocks his seatbelt and steps from the vehicle. Four guys hurry over, each going to a different car door.
Woo! Let's go, fellas! Come on, man! Yeah!
Take it easy. The car's brand new.
No problem, buddy. I got this.
Baby, let's ride.
Stay playing, baby, before I have to go to the club, baby.
Your parents know the kind of company you're keeping?
Shut up.
The driver turns the key.
This shit ain't working, man.
It's coded.
What's the code, man?
I'm afraid I can't give you that.
Well, I'm afraid we'll have to beat out you.
What's wrong?
Get out of this car. Get out of the car, nigga. Come on.
The four surround Frank, some with makeshift weapons.
Keep your ass. Come on, baby.
One starts to lunge.
Hold on. Just came out of the dry cleaners.
Frank removes his suit jacket and places it on the car's roof. He spin kicks one carjacker, whips another to the ground, and dispatches a third with a strike to the leg. The last guy waves a switchblade. Frank disarms him with a kick and catches the knife. He touches the blade to the carjacker's throat before punching him out. Frank goes for his suit jacket.
Hands up! Stop moving or I will shoot you.
Don't you have homework to do?
The woman grimaces, still aiming.
Why don't you go and do it?
Okay, I'm sorry.
She traipses off past her fallen comrades and drops her gun. Back behind the wheel, with his gloves and seatbelt on, Frank unlocks the car with a code. He turns the key in the ignition. The car pulls away, driving past the carjackers stirring on the ground. A traveling view over water frames the Miami skyline. Frank's car moves along a highway, passing numerous palm trees. On a quiet street, the car approaches a building. A clock outside the structure shows 2:59. Frank stops at the curb, eyes fixed on the clock. His wristwatch showing 3 sharp, he keeps his attention riveted on the clock's minute hand. A view frames the building's exterior stairs. The clock strikes 3. Several doors open, and children stream from the building, down the stairs, and out onto the sidewalk. Kids touch Frank's car as they run by.
Hey!
A preteen boy sits in back, his feet up on the seat.
The game!
What's the first rule when entering a man's car?
He slides them off.
Respect a man's car, a man respects you.
Rule number 2.
Greet the man. Good afternoon, Frank.
Good afternoon, Jack.
Can we play the game now?
Does it think your brain will be too tired after a whole day of school?
You're just afraid I'm gonna win.
I'm afraid you're gonna be too worn out to do your homework.
It's Friday. I don't have any homework.
In that case, the game.
Yes!
But first, it's the third rule of the car.
Jack buckles his seatbelt.
Good.
They drive off from the curb. Elsewhere, numerous yachts sit moored in a marina. High-rise buildings stand overlooking the waterfront. Frank drives Jack down a thoroughfare.
5 points. I'm white, I'm round, but I'm not always around.
A tennis ball.
Tennis balls are yellow.
A bird's-eye view looks down on a cruise ship gliding over tranquil water. Frank's car heads along a highway.
4 points. Sometimes I'm halved, sometimes I'm whole, sometimes a slice of me is all you'll know.
A loaf of bread?
No.
A cargo ship surges through the harbor.
3 points. Sometimes I'm light, sometimes I'm dark, sometimes I'm both.
I know, a light bulb.
No.
A pizza.
No.
A rotating perspective from above takes in a block of high-rises. Sand replaces asphalt as our view takes in a strip of shoreline. Beachfront properties stretch across the horizon. Frank's car coasts down another highway lined with palm trees. It turns onto a bridge spanning a channel. In a quiet neighborhood, the car pulls up to a pair of gates. Frank nods to two men wearing black sunglasses. They nod back, then step away from the gates as they swing open. Frank's car proceeds onto a wide cobblestone driveway leading up to a palatial estate. A man follows a sulking woman from the mansion.
Audrey, stop walking away from me. Listen, I've got to finish this conversation.
Frank drives past.
Look, I've got about 2 minutes. Where's he going?
He parks a little ways off and glances at the couple, then at Jack.
Okay, look at me. Last clue for all the points. Everyone wants to walk on me, but only a happy few ever have. Take your time.
Frank sees the man return to the house, then Audrey approaching in the side mirror. Patting her cheeks, she opens Jack's door.
Hey, bud.
Shh, Mom, it's the game. I'm trying to think.
Sorry. Hey, Frank, how are you today?
Well, Mrs. Billings.
Frank, can I team up with Mom?
I don't know. It's not in the rules.
Come on. What's the point in having rules if you can't bend them?
Okay. Just this once.
Yeah!
All right. Give me some clues.
It's round, but not always around. It's light sometimes, it's dark sometimes, it's both sometimes. Everyone wants to walk on it, but only a happy few ever have.
That is a hard one.
Tell me about it.
Audrey whispers in her son's ear.
The moon!
Correct.
Woo! Good job, good job. All right, come on.
See you Monday.
Bye, Frank, thanks.
Keep your snacks in the kitchen.
Bye, Mom.
Bye, honey.
Hey. He's really taken to you in the month you've been with us.
Likewise.
It's too bad you can't stay on after Tony gets back.
It was just a favor. I don't usually do this sort of a job.
I thought you were a professional driver.
A different kind of driving.
Well, we're all gonna miss you when you're gone.
Audrey lingers, leaning in through the passenger window.
And thank you for what you did.
For what?
For turning the car around so that Jack wouldn't have to see us fighting. You really know kids, don't you?
I know fighting.
He hasn't seen Jack in months. And then when he gets back here, all I can hear is what I'm doing wrong. You think that after being separated for a year that he would... I'm sorry. You don't have to hear this.
It's okay. For what it's worth, I think you're doing a great job with Jack.
Thank you.
Anytime I can be of help, is anything you need.
It's really sweet of you, Frank. I might have to take you up on it.
Audrey straightens, then leans back down.
I almost forgot. I'm supposed to take Jack to the doctor tomorrow morning for his annual checkup. But I'm organizing a surprise party for him, even though...
A view frames a surveillance device in a tray.
Thought it would be nice.
A goateed man listens in over a monitor.
While I decorate and his friends arrive, I was thinking if you wouldn't mind...
I'll take him.
I feel kind of funny cutting into your weekend.
Just picking up a friend at the airport later on in the day.
Oh, that's nice.
What is?
The guys on security say you're a bit of a loner. So it's just nice to hear you have a friend.
He's not really a friend. He's French.
I'll call you back.
Mr. Billings looks over.
Audrey, I'd like to finish our conversation.
glaring. She watches him heading back inside. Frank glances off.
Well, if anything comes up between now and then, you have my cell.
Nothing will come up, Mrs. Billings.
Audrey.
His eyes meet hers, a faint smile shared between them. As she steps away, he observes through the side mirror. The window rolls up, and he drives on. Mr. Billings looks on, phone in hand. The two guards step to the open entrance gates, watching Frank driving away. Up the street, the car passes a parked van. Inside the van, the goateed man sits before a setup of surveillance equipment. He calls a guy with blonde dreadlocks.
Yeah, hello?
Confirmed
for tomorrow. 9 a.m.
On a waterfront property, a view travels down from a billowing canopy. On a lawn, a kendo fighter clad in white practices against several opponents wearing black. He punches one, sweeps another off their feet, and whacks a third. Flipping a foe into the air, he pummels another. Two foes charge at once, wooden swords destroying his face protector. Five swords thrust inside the empty face shield. Having dropped to safety, the white-clad fighter leaps high, knocking his opponents to their backs. He lands with an intense stare. He tosses his sword to a foe as he stands, then spreads his arms wide. In a house, four men gawk as a scantily clad woman shimmies past. Outside, the man with blonde locks approaches the dark-haired fighter.
Tomorrow, 9 a.m. Only change. The driver be taken in, not the mother. Even better.
Inside, the four guys stand at attention as the dark-haired man approaches.
That's me.
One of the guys unlocks a metal case by sliding a card along a slot. He opens it, revealing a canister containing a vial of green material. The dark-haired man examines it.
Is it stable?
Yes, it's stable.
And the antidote?
Another case is opened, and a guy lifts another container. The dark-haired man tosses the vial to a skinny guy, who catches it with a frightened expression.
See you tomorrow, gentlemen.
The dark-haired man opens a freezer. He sets the purple glowing antidote container on a holder inside. As he goes to join the blonde woman, he shuts the freezer. Elsewhere.
And in other news, the drug enforcement ministers of six Latin American countries arrived in Miami today for a summit meeting.
Yeah.
Jefferson Billings.
Martin, Frank. 1156 Palmetto.
At home, Frank talks on his cell.
That's what you told me 45 minutes ago. No, I don't need anything else. Just give me the pizza.
He opens the door.
I'm not paying for that.
Hi.
So, Mr. Martin, it's 1 medium pie, no mozzarella, extra...
Audrey enters.
...extra anchovies, which amounts to $11.95. I hope you're hungry.
I have no idea.
He ogles her. He disconnects.
Mrs. Billings.
Audrey.
She presses herself against him.
What are you doing?
What does it look like I'm doing?
Have you been drinking?
Well...
She touches his face.
He said if I needed anything.
I can't.
Why? Because of who I am?
Because of who I am.
Looking into his eyes, she draws closer. She hugs him. He drops his arms to his sides, then offers a grudging pat on the back.
I feel so lost, so confused.
Who isn't?
Later, outside, he walks her to her car. She opens the driver's door.
Thank you, Frank. For the time. The respect. I think it's what I needed the most.
She gives him a kiss on the cheek and sits behind the wheel. He shuts her door, then watches as she drives on. Daytime, on a city street, a black SUV stops at a curb. The skinny guy steps from the passenger side. He opens the back door for the blonde woman. A burly man joins them with a hard shell case, which he passes to his skinny comrade. As they head for a high-rise building, the SUV drives off. Frank's car turns onto the street.
Am I gonna get a shot?
No.
Frank makes a turn into a parking structure. Inside, he drives past the parked SUV. a long-haired man watches from behind the wheel. In the building, the blonde woman and her two comrades emerge from an elevator. The skinny guy eyes a security camera. Then they all enter a pediatric clinic. A receptionist behind the counter turns with a start.
Jace, we're not open yet.
It's an emergency. I need to see the doctor immediately.
Right. Dr. Koblin, if you'll come out here, please, we have an issue. You'll have to fill out some papers stating the medical problem.
Actually, my problem's not medical.
The blonde draws a gun.
It's psychological.
She shoots her.
Yes, Laura, what seems to be the problem?
Me.
She guns him down, too. Meanwhile.
Hate shots.
Number one, there's no guarantee you're getting a shot. So there's no sense in getting all worked up over something that might not happen.
Frank and Jack walk through the structure. In a swimming pool, the dark-haired man answers his phone.
Give me the good news.
Doctor said I'm cured.
In an elevator.
Frank, it hurts a lot.
I'll never let anyone hurt you a lot.
Promise?
You know my fourth rule? Never make a promise you can't keep. Come on.
Elsewhere.
Close the door.
The skinny man shoves the receptionist and doctor's bodies into a closet, grabs a lab coat from the door, and shuts it. The elevator doors open.
Come on.
Jack follows Frank to the receptionist's desk, where the blonde woman stands wearing a lab coat.
May I help you?
Jack Billings to see Dr. Koblin.
I'm sorry, he's out sick today. He'll be seeing Dr. Tyberg.
I like Dr. Koblin.
Don't worry, Dr. Tyberg's very nice. Now, if you'll just take him into room 3.
Where's Miss Laura?
Who?
You're standing at her desk.
That Miss Laura. She's out sick, too. There's a lot of flu going around. Now, come on. Doctor's got a busy day.
Come on. It'll be over before you know it.
The skinny guy steps from an exam room and glances down at the name on his lab coat.
I'm Dr. Tyberg.
Can't I wait for my doctor?
Unfortunately, your doctor was called away on emergency.
The nurse said he had the flu.
That was the emergency. He came down with flu very quickly. So, the sooner we start, the sooner we finish.
He hands Jack a candy.
Come, I show you something very cool. I'm sorry, doctor, patient, privacy in room, but you can wait in reception area or a glass of water or... Hey, trust me. I'm doctor.
Please, in the exam room, Jack gazes uneasily at the skinny guy. Frank answers his cell, while Tarconi collects his luggage in an airport.
Frank, I'm here.
You really?
Yeah, we had fantastic tailwinds.
For 2 hours in my vacation, just like that.
From now on, it's the only way I fly, Frank. Tailwinds are nothing.
Glad you made it.
Frank notices a tattoo on the blonde's leg near a garter, Hello? Reading, Death by Rabbit.
Sorry, Dr. Dunez is not in today. Call back Monday.
The burly man passes Frank, his lab coat labeled Dr. Dunez, and enters the exam room.
Listen, Inspector, I'm a little tied up. You mind taking a cab? You have the address, yes?
Oh, thank you.
Oh, you know, I heard the fish down here is fantastic. I could make us a bouillabaisse.
Frank spies blood seeping from beneath the closet door.
I gotta go.
The skinny man holds a syringe out of sight.
You know, maybe it's better if we wait for his regular doctor to come back.
It's very important that he receive his immunizations.
Well, I'm sure it is. But a week won't make a difference.
No, we'll
Frank
do
kicks
it.
The exam table at the skinny man, who drops the syringe. Frank removes the table's extender and jams it into the burly guy's shoulder. As the skinny man flips the table, Frank carries Jack to safety. Frank kicks open a wall vent and sets Jack inside. The skinny man strikes Frank with an anatomical skeleton. The burly man charges Frank, and all three men crash through a wall to an adjacent exam room.
Keep going, Jack!
Jack crawls off as the skinny man punches Frank. Lying prone, Frank grabs a surgical instrument and jabs it into the burly guy's shoulder, then kicks his comrade away. As Jack scampers into another vent, Frank kicks one thug into another and crashes back through the door out to the corridor. The blonde woman opens her lab coat and draws dual pistols. Frank shields himself with the fallen door as she opens fire. Tumbling back, he ducks into an adjacent storage closet. As he peeks out, she fires again, her bullets peppering the wall with holes. Frank ventures out, evading gunfire, as he bursts into a storage room where Jack cowers. Searching around, Frank grabs a metal canister. In reception, the blonde stiletto-clad feet step over spent bullet casings as Frank opens a valve on the canister. He puts the canister on a cart, which he rolls outside. The cart bounces off a wall and stops near the blonde. Frank grabs a jug of flammable chemicals and hurls it at a ceiling fixture just outside. The escaping gas ignites, and Frank shuts the door. As the canister zooms like a rocket, the blonde leaps away, and a fiery explosion rings out down the hall in the storage room.
Look at me. Look at me. Remember my promise?
Yes.
Frank lifts Jack. Flames roar in reception, activating the sprinkler system. As the blonde gets to her feet, Frank carries Jack from the storage room into another room off a hallway. Seeing a silhouetted figure passing in the exam room, the blonde woman opens fire. A closer look reveals the burly guy lying dead. She aims into a corner where the skinny guy cowers.
It's me!
Get out!
In an office, Frank sets Jack down near a wall vent.
Frank.
Opening another door, the blonde fires inside. She creeps around a corner, weapons at the ready. She kicks open another door and shoots up the vacant office where Frank and Jack just were. In a corridor, Jack pushes an elevator button, emitting ripples of energy. Climbing from a grate, Frank joins him. The rippling waves enter the vent, traveling through the ducting, and pass into the office where the blonde stands.
Shit.
Frank pulls Jack to safety in the elevator as the blonde's bullets pierce the closing doors. The long-haired thug waits in the parked SUV.
The patient's not cooperating. Prep the vehicle.
He gets out of the SUV and carries a case over to Frank's parked car. Opening the case reveals a small device, which he affixes to the chassis of Frank's car. As he pushes a button, a red light blinks.
Come on, hurry!
Frank and Jack sprint to the car, no one else in sight.
Don't worry, everything's gonna be okay.
Frank unlocks the car with the dash display, then turns the key in the ignition and peels out through the parking structure. Guns in hand and clad only in lingerie, the blonde woman exits the medical building to confused stares from bystanders. As Frank drives out of the structure, she opens fire, the bullets ricocheting off the car's body and windows. Jack gazes fearfully as they head out of reach. The blonde lowers her guns as a squad car pulls up.
Freeze! Drop your weapon!
Get down!
Put your guns on the ground!
She calls the dark-haired man.
See?
They got away.
Cuts!
Plan B?
Yes, Plan B.
She clears her empty clips, loads two more, turns, and opens fire on the cops, along with their squad car. At the Billings estate, children frolic in and around a pool. Holding a present, Jefferson playfully shoves two kids in, then joins his estranged wife.
Oh, you made it.
Uh-huh.
Aw, what's that?
Jack's birthday present. Baseball uniform, cleats, glove, and a bat. It's his favorite sport.
It was, last year. He's on a soccer team now, and he's actually really good. You know, you should see him sometime.
Hello.
A housekeeper waves.
Mr. and Mrs. Billings, they're coming! Hide, everyone, hide!
Frank's car pulls up, and the entry gates open. In the house, Audrey goes to a window, flashing an eager smile. Frank holds his phone.
Yes.
Good morning, Mr. Driver.
Who is this?
Look in your rearview mirror and you see who it is.
He eyes a green laser sight on Jack's forehead.
I know what you're thinking. Bulletproof glass. So now you tell me, in your experience, which, judging from the little performance you put on back at the office, goes way beyond just driving children to school and back, does a bulletproof glass stop a 7.62 armor piercing round?
Frank, why'd you stop the car?
Audrey makes a call on her cell.
Don't bother, Louis. They're triangulated. They're over 300 feet away.
Come on, Frank, pick up.
None of this would have been necessary if you had not screwed up my plan. So, now I'm going to tell you how to set things right. Someone is going to appear in a few seconds.
Out on the street, a squad car swerves into an electrical box on the sidewalk. The driver's door opens, revealing the blonde's tattooed leg. Strutting over to Frank's car on the driveway, she raps on the passenger window.
Let her in.
She drums her fingers on the window. As Audrey hurries off, the blonde moves her pressed palm down the glass.
Driver.
The door unlocks.
Good boy,
good boy.
The blonde sheds her jacket and takes a seat. Audrey steps out to the drive. The blonde lifts her pistols.
Hi.
Frank goes for his seatbelt.
Leave it on.
She points one gun at his crotch.
Personally, I hate kids. I don't know what your feelings are on the subject, but if you ever want to have any, make no moves but the moves I tell you to make.
You're in her hands now, amigo mio. They can be very gentle hands. Or they can be the hands from hell. Trust me on this one.
Trust him on this one. Now drive!
While Jack stares with a furrowed brow, his mother jogs over in slow motion. She heaves a troubled sigh. Frank glances in the rear view as a security vehicle speeds over down the street. He backs the car out through the gates as Audrey watches with a stunned expression. The blonde opens fire on the approaching security guards, blowing their vehicle's tire out. Frank puts his car in gear and they peel out as the guard's vehicle crashes into the squad car. Spying another squad car, Frank steers sharply away into traffic. He shifts and accelerates, and the pursuing cruiser rear-ends a parked car at the curb. Frank's car comes up to an intersection.
Make a left! I said left!
Frank makes a right turn, and more cruisers join the pursuit. As they speed down an alley, the blonde looks over her shoulder. Frank turns, pulling into an adjacent block. Approaching from either direction, the cruisers brake in a bottleneck. Frank reverses out of the lot and drives backwards through the alley the way they came.
Listen, we keep doing this your way. No matter how many rights and lefts we make, they're gonna catch us. Let me do this my way so no one gets hurt.
Where's the fun in that?
Let's save the fun for later.
They back out into the street, followed closely by a reversing squad car. Frank drives onto a walkway where two pedestrians scamper to safety. His car bounces on its way over a wooden boardwalk. A pursuing vehicle loses control on a ramp, flips, and crashes, blocking a nearby cruiser. As Frank's car speeds over the sand, he swerves to avoid beachgoers. A squad car skids, taking out a lifeguard tower. Frank's car continues along the sand, while the squad cars head parallel along a boardwalk. Frank's car fishtails into a sudden turn. Running out of real estate, a squad car plows through a railing, and another slams into it from behind, disabling both. Frank's car veers wildly onto a street, swerving to avoid more law enforcement. The vehicle heads onto the spiraling ramp of a parking structure, cops hot on his heels as it hugs the curbs. Suddenly, Frank jerks the wheel, steering off the ramp and onto a parking level. With police pursuing from different directions, he swerves around cars and columns. He steers into a turn, squad cars breathing down his neck, then accelerates. Up ahead, a sedan starts to back out. Frank avoids the sedan, but a cruiser T-bones it. Frank careens back onto the spiral ramp, unable to shake his pursuers. As they reach the open upper level of the structure at speed, the blonde eyes Frank, then puts on her seatbelt. Frank's car barrels straight through a concrete wall. It plummets toward a facing building, landing on a level under construction. It drifts through the structure, taking out pillars and plastic drop cloths. As it finally stops, hugging the edge of the building, a view shows a sheer drop below.
Not bad.
Did your mother ever teach you to say thank you?
Yeah, she tried and failed miserably. No, I think we lost them.
Think again.
A police helicopter hovers across the way. The blonde opens fire, blowing it up.
Thought complete. Let's go.
Scowling, Frank puts the car in gear. In an alley below, a man swigs from a bottle. Seeing the black car riding the edges of two buildings like rails overhead, he eyes the bottle. He sets it aside. At the Billings estate, law enforcement officers stand in the driveway, one beckoning vehicles through the entry gates. An SUV parks and a bald plainclothes man gets out. He checks a file as he makes his way into the mansion, swarming with personnel.
What do you mean you can't find him? He's one man in one car. He's a chauffeur, for Christ's sake.
Not exactly, sir. You think there's a possibility he may have been in on it?
It's impossible.
How would you know? He's been working here for a month. He could have been setting this up the whole time, and you wouldn't have known any different.
Oh, you are such an expert on knowing people.
His background.
He hands Jefferson the file.
He's ex-Special Forces. Head in an elite commando unit for 5 years, specialized in search and destroy. Been in and out of Lebanon, Syria, Sudan. The man is a hunter.
I don't care what his skills are. I don't care where he's from. This is not a war zone. This is an American city. Where's my son?
As Jefferson eyes the plainclothesman, Audrey shakes her head. On a vast marina, Frank's car drives past boats, stacked in dry dock. someone opens a warehouse's roll-up door, and Frank's car creeps inside. He makes a turn. On a covered walkway, men mill about in shadow as Frank parks.
Last stop. All out.
The blonde woman leans close to Frank.
You're quite a guy. Another time, another place. You and me, baby. The pleasure we could have.
She licks his face from his lips up past his eye to his ear.
Beauty.
Frank.
The guy with blonde locks pulls Jack from the back seat.
Frank!
As Frank gets out, thugs train weapons on him.
Frank!
Not what you expected when you reported for work this morning, is it, Frank? No?
Is that what passes for wit in this circle?
With this circle, my friend, wit is not a requirement of the job. Brutality, yes. An ability to inflict pain, absolutely. Certain psychotic moral ignorance, blind obedience, all required. But not wit. How was it?
Fun.
In the beginning, my love.
The blonde woman and dark-haired man kiss.
What's this all about?
A timely question. Max? Pardon me.
Max, the guy with blonde locks, hands him a phone. At the Billings estate, Jefferson answers his cell.
Hello. Put me on the speaker so you don't have to repeat the instructions. In the next 2 hours, you get $5 million in non-sequential $100 bills. You put them in a waterproof suitcase. You go to the Bayfront Park, personally. There will be a blue Chrysler parked on the sand. You place the suitcase in the trunk, and you leave.
I don't know if I can get $5 million in 2 hours.
Mr. Billings, please, I read the newspapers. The day you were appointed to your current position, your net worth exceeded $100 million, so you won't even feel the bite.
What guarantee do I have that you won't harm my son?
Guarantee, Mr. Billings. I'm not a car dealer. Don't let the charming accent and my grammatically impeccable syntax mislead you. I live in the jungle, and in the jungle, you either eat or be eaten. But in the spirit of doing business, here is the guarantee. 10 minutes past the deadline. If the money doesn't arrive, I'll send a finger. 20 minutes, a hand. 30 minutes, a foot. Sounds like we have a deal, don't we, Mr. Billings?
You have a deal.
Jefferson eyes his distraught wife.
Could we please speak to our son?
The kidnapper holds up the phone.
Mommy!
You have 2 hours, Mr. Billings. Starting now.
He tosses the phone in the water.
Just get my son!
All right. All right.
Frank! You promised you wouldn't let anybody hurt me! You promised!
Never make promises you can't keep, my friend.
I don't. It's one of my rules.
Bravo! A man who lives his life by the rules. Well, in my world, rules are meant to be broken.
Not mine.
This time you're gonna have to make an exception. Go.
Frank shifts his gaze from the kidnapper to his blonde accomplice. Pausing by his car, he notices the reflection of the undercarriage bomb on the floor beneath it. He turns to the kidnapper, who takes a gun from a henchman. He aims at Frank, then fires a warning shot on the ground. As Frank meets his gaze, he gestures with his head to the car.
Frank!
Frank turns away and opens his driver's door. He gets behind the wheel. The kidnapper nods to the skinny man. Go.
Hey, driver!
He holds up his middle finger.
No, wait. A little distance between us isn't a bad thing.
Aboard a boat, the blonde holds a small device.
Andiamo!
As Frank drives off, the kidnapper waves, and his boat starts out of its berth. Frank speeds wildly past the vessels in dry dock.
Now.
The blonde works a dial on her device. Frank's car catches air on some piled junk. As it approaches a crane upside down, the crane's hook snags the bomb and tears it off the chassis. A huge explosion bursts from the crane tower. Frank's car rights itself in midair and touches down on its tires on a lot overlooking the waterfront, where it swerves to a stop. Meanwhile, three power boats speed through a waterway. At the Billings estate, a decrypting message appears on an agent's computer.
Hello. I
It's me.
Regrets I'm here, gentlemen.
You son of a bitch.
Look, I had nothing to do with this.
One scratch on his head, one hair out of place, I
Mr. Billings, let me speak to who's in charge.
Hello, Frank. This is U.S. Marshal Stapleton.
You have to act fast. There are three boats. Crankies.
Just tell us where you are.
Get a plane up over the intercoastal. They're heading north.
Just tell me where you are, Frank.
Just tell us where you are!
He disconnects.
Hello, Frank.
Got it.
On the monitor, a phone number and a caller location label appears on a map. Now squad cars pull to a stop in a house's yard. Elsewhere, Frank drives. He opens his glove compartment and chooses from a selection of three phones. In a home's kitchen, several eggs sit in a mixing bowl. Tarconi places a tray of madeleines in the oven. He takes his phone from his pocket.
Tarconi, it's me. Get out of the house.
No. I was just petting the madeleines.
Tarconi,
forget the madeleines. Just get out.
And go where?
Anywhere.
The beach. Go to the beach.
Oh, the beach. The famous Miami Beach. Oh, my dream. I would love to go to the beach.
Peeking through window blinds, he sees a SWAT team approaching.
Maybe not.
He opens the door.
Hey, who the fuck are you?
I'm the cook.
He grins, then he's force marched away.
Oh, that's a mistake. A terrible mistake.
Frank's car stops in the distance.
Why we can't all just get along? No.
Seeing Tarconi put into a squad car, Frank drives on. Now, money machines sort cash at the Billings estate. Jefferson grabs his cell phone, then eyes Audrey. She steps away and answers hers.
Hello?
It's Frank. Don't hang up. Pretend it's someone else.
Audrey catches Jefferson looking her way.
Hi, Susan.
Stapleton watches, too.
No, I'm just here at home.
I didn't do it, Audrey. She had a gun on Jack. I had no choice.
Yeah, I saw that.
She steps outside.
What do you know?
It's more than a kidnapping.
They called and asked for a ransom.
The doctors, they were fake. They were trying to give Jack a shot when I interrupted them.
Frank glances off.
Audrey... I promised Jack I wouldn't let anyone hurt him. I'm not gonna break that promise. I'll call you back.
She lowers her phone, her husband behind her.
Audrey? Is everything all right?
It's a pretty stupid question to ask right now, don't you think, Jeff?
She returns inside. In a police station interview room, Tarconi plays with a sandwich set before him.
All right. So tell me again, Inspector Tarconi. Why you didn't immediately identify yourself as a police officer?
Oh, I was overwhelmed by the effectiveness of your operation, the sophistication of your equipment. You know, I work in a small office in a small town. We only have small crimes. I must admit, I was a little insecure.
And you and Frank Martin are friends, right?
A friend? I wouldn't say exactly a friend. I know him. We have a relationship.
A long relationship?
Not so long.
But they found you cooking at his house.
But I'm French.
So?
We don't need to know someone for a long time in order to cook for them. It's our way of breaking the ice. Take, for example, you. This sandwich and coffee you have so graciously offered me. You will pardon me to sing so, but it's not very good.
Yeah, I know it sucks, but what does that got to do with anything?
Do you have a kitchen?
The interviewer's eyes dart. Behind caution tape, first responders work outside the medical center building. Frank sneaks off behind a small crowd of looky-loos. Now, hiding at a security station inside, he waits for some first responders to board an elevator, then gets up. He types on a keyboard, perusing surveillance footage of the intruders. He zooms in on an image of the skinny man eyeing the surveillance camera. Spying an MP4 player on the workstation, he connects it to the station's CPU. Spying a passing officer, he ducks down. The officer looks over keenly toward the workstation. Frank disconnects the MP4 player and starts to skulk off. The officer steps closer. Unnoticed, Frank sneaks through a door. In a corridor, a trio of firefighters passes. Frank peeks around a corner. The firefighters board a glass elevator. It ascends, revealing Frank riding atop the car. Now, an aerial perspective swoops over the structure. In the building, a view frames the aftermath of the destruction in the vacant reception area. Frank steps into sight and cautiously makes his way through the debris-strewn corridor. He enters one of the exam rooms through the hole busted in the wall. On all fours, he spots the dropped syringe beneath a cart. He picks it up. As he straightens, a plainclothesman points a gun at him.
Don't move. Smith! Drop it.
The cop fires, shattering the syringe. Frank kicks him, then boots a chair into Smith. Smith's partner retrieves his gun, but Frank clamps his legs around the cop's wrist, disarming him. Frank hurls the syringe, kicking Smith's partner for good measure. In a drawer, he finds an empty syringe, then grabs a bottle marked H2O saline solution. In the hall, he ducks behind a corner as a cop leads firefighters into the taped-off room. Frank steps from hiding and hurries past the room, then rounds another corner. At a beachfront park, Jefferson wears an earpiece.
Are you sure this is safe?
Look over your shoulder. We got you covered.
Behind him, a sniper peers through a rifle scope. Jefferson opens the trunk of a blue car, tosses a case inside, and shuts it. A spread is laid out at the police station.
As my mother used to say, a meal is only limited by your imagination. It's cranberry, a cock monsieur.
Crème brûlée.
Cranberry.
Cock
monsieur.
Cock monsieur.
Tarconi answers his phone.
Oui?
Where are you?
Cooking.
Cooking. Can you talk?
Speak up a little with my mother.
Mom!
Do you mind? Thank you.
Tarconi hands a pair of tongs to a man. He makes his way from the room to a bullpen while Frank drives.
May I ask who you're cooking for?
For the U.S. Marshals. Once they found my badge, they were very polite. They gave me a coffee and a sandwich. You wouldn't believe what passes for food in this place, Frank.
But I'm correcting the situation
while they wait for my chief to call back and confirm everything. Of course, that might take a while. He's never there.
Anything about me?
Yes, they are very interested about you. They want to know where you are. Where are you?
Nowhere for very long. Listen, hold on.
Frank plugs a cable into the MP4 player and opens the dashboard computer.
Do you have access to a computer?
Easier than having access to something decent to it.
Tarconi takes a seat in a cubicle. The nameplate on the partition behind him reads Sergeant Alex Gonzalez. He shoots a quick glance over the partition, then begins typing on a computer keyboard. A photo of the skinny man comes up on the monitor.
Oh, handsome fellow.
Who is he?
That's what I need to know. Do they have an ID program?
You'll forgive me, but I'm not so used to this system. Back home, there is one computer for 10 of us. So, how is it with you, Frank?
It's a complicated story.
You mean you're in the shit?
You might say that.
In other words, United States.
Voilà. A Russian biologist with advanced
degrees from the State Laboratory for Biological Warfare in Siberia.
They have an address?
Miami, Park West, King Street, number 11.
A zoom in on a computer map dissolves to a bird's eye view of Frank's car stopping at a curb. He gets out and steps onto the sidewalk before crossing the street to a building across the way. As he jogs over, a view through a window shows a man hurriedly putting belongings in a bag. It's the skinny Russian biologist who tosses the bag aside and loads a clip and a handgun. As he steps into a corridor, he finds himself face to face with Frank. Tossing the bag aside, he goes for his gun, Frank ducking away as he fires. The biologist backs down the hall, firing all the while as Frank advances. Bursting onto a fire escape, the thug shoots again, but Frank darts back inside. They both descend, Frank a landing above his foe. The Russian gets off more shots. He hurls the empty pistol away. As Frank gives chase, he leaps onto a retaining wall, then onto a parked car in a lot. He slides off the car's trunk, while Frank leaps from the wall to the lot, landing in a crouch. He stands tall, straightening his suit jacket and tugging on his tie. Frank hot on his heels, the biologist races onto a sidewalk and shoves a pedestrian as he leaps onto a planter. Frank starts toward an approaching truck, while the biologist climbs a gate up to a walkway. Frank leaps onto the truck's hood and clambers onto the roof. As the biologist sprints down a walkway, Frank boosts himself up by a railing. The foot chase continues into a mall, where the Russian knocks a display over. The Russian thug exits, brushing past shoppers. As Frank catches up, the Russian grabs hold of a female bystander. He shoves her into Frank, who catches her. Then he leaps over a railing onto a landing and races downstairs. As the biologist sprints toward a school bus down the street, Frank notices two personal watercrafts idling in the channel below. Frank leaps off a railing, slides down an American flag, and lands behind a woman on one of the watercrafts. He flips her over his shoulder, the two trading places. The guy on the other craft follows. The biologist clings to the rear of the bus as Frank pilots the watercraft.
What are you doing?
Trying to catch a bus.
The biologist jiggles the handle of the bus's rear door. Seeing an oncoming boat, Frank steers sharply away. Caught in the violent wake, the guy behind them goes flying from his watercraft. Frank drives on, with a Miami police boat in pursuit. The biologist watches, still clinging to the bus.
What are you doing, driver? Not so good on the water, eh?
He mockingly waves to Frank as the bus drives on. Frank's terrified passenger slaps his shoulder. Then he makes a sharp turn, kicking up a huge spray. As Frank steers onto a short ramp, the watercraft goes airborne in slow motion. It sails over a boardwalk, then lands in the street directly behind the bus. The panicked Russian kicks the rear door handle and makes his way inside. As Frank hops onto the rear of the bus, the woman on the watercraft waves dazedly. The bus brakes. Frank seizes the biologist by the chin and forces him into a seat as passengers file off.
Okay. Tell me about the doctor's office.
What doctor's office?
The one where you try to stick the kid with this. You want to tell me?
Frank bites the cap off the syringe, then jabs him in the leg and pushes the plunger. The biologist pulls the needle out and gets to his feet.
Do you know what you have done? Do you know what you have done?
Obviously something not conducive to your good health, which is all I needed to know in the first place. Have a good life. What's left of it?
Outside, the biologist unbuckles a man's belt and uses it as a tourniquet while staggering away. As he races toward a bridge, Frank gets off the bus. Passengers point in the Russian's direction. At the park, the sniper's crosshairs frame the blue car.
Outpost base, the ransom is still there.
Thanks.
At the Billings's.
The ransom still hasn't been picked up.
What does that mean?
Don't worry. Right now, it means nothing yet.
And what if it's not just a kidnapping?
Ma'am, I've worked on over 15 kidnapping cases in the past 2 years.
And you think that if they don't take the ransom, I'm going to get my son back?
Audrey, don't make this any more complicated than it already is.
I'm not making this complicated, Jefferson. It's because of your job.
What does my job have to do with any of this?
It has everything to do with it. Don't you understand? Because you became famous, we became the targets. And no matter what any of you all think, the only one who's out there trying to get Jack back is Frank.
Frank? The chauffeur?
You spoke to Frank Martin. He didn't tell us about it?
What the hell are you doing talking to him?
Because he's the last person who saw Jack alive.
A tech with a headset.
We found the boy.
A florist truck sits parked facing a stretch of waterfront. A bomb disposal robot rolls toward the vehicle as a SWAT team assembles. In Stapleton's SUV, the Billings sit together with fraught expressions. The robot lifts its arm, controlled by a tech typing at a computer nearby. As the arm's clamp grips the truck's rear door handle, the robot begins to throw sparks. The tech lifts a handset.
It shut down.
Hard drive blew.
We'll get another one in there.
Yes, sir.
How long is it going to take?
Ma'am, we're going as fast as we can.
He can suffocate in there.
Ma'am, stay calm.
It's my son!
Audrey, let them work.
Are you just going to sit there and do nothing?
Audrey, they're experts.
Everyone is an expert. I've had it with all of you.
Audrey gets out.
Audrey!
Racing toward the truck in slow motion, she shoves aside two SWAT members. Stapleton and another man restrain Jefferson, who goes after his wife. Audrey reaches the rear of the truck as personnel hold Jefferson fast. Audrey swings the doors open wide. She holds Jack's face in her hands. He nods, then turns to his dad and gives him a hug. Mounted in a corner, a camera transmits footage to the kidnapper, who watches on a monitor at home.
Breathe. Come on, breathe.
You're the devil.
I wish.
The blonde leans down for a kiss. Meanwhile, the biologist staggers into a vacant warehouse, followed shortly thereafter by Frank. The Russian trudges up a flight of steps, Frank calmly trailing behind. Upstairs, the biologist moves a plastic curtain aside and hobbles forward. Frank follows closely, ducking aside as the biologist whips around. The Russian darts on. Frank finds himself in a room containing pressurized chambers made of soft plastic. Peering in one, he sees a man lying on a hospital bed, eyes shut. Elsewhere, the biologist surprises a comrade who draws a gun.
Dmitri! You scare shit in me!
Where is Stanovich?
He's in chamber.
I need to speak with him.
He won't be long.
I need to speak with him now!
Sit down! Listen, Panasonic. This rap music is good.
Dmitri bites on the end of his tourniquet. Meanwhile, Frank sees an elderly patient coughing in his bed. Another convulses on his back. A look of recognition dawns on Frank when suddenly Max slugs him from behind a plastic curtain. Max tears off Frank's suit jacket, then hurls him through a curtain to a lower level. Max leaps down and pulls him to his feet, ripping Frank's shirt sleeve in the process. He boots Frank through some sawhorses before tossing him onto a work table. Max drags him along the cluttered table. He strikes and misses, cleaving a green coconut in two. Losing his grip on Frank's arm, he stumbles back and grabs a crate. Frank shoves his fists in the coconut halves, leaps, and using them like boxing gloves, proceeds to punch his foe in the face and body. Max flips Frank onto his shoulders, hurls him against the hull of a dry-docked boat, then rolls a smaller boat toward him. Frank clambers onto the first boat, narrowly avoiding being crushed between both. Max grabs a wooden beam and clocks Frank, who falls with his head shattering a glass hatch on the boat deck. Frank ducks into the hatch as Max arrives. Below decks, Frank breaks a stool over Max's legs, dropping him. Frank punches and kicks his foe, booting him through a doorway. Max straightens, grimacing. Frank swings the door at him, breaking it off the hinges. Frank nearly loses his balance as the boat lists on its platform. Frank pulls Max up, then kicks out a portside window behind him. Now, standing in the smaller boat, Frank pulls Max into the square hatch and leaps away. Head and shoulders sticking out, Max shrieks as the boat crashes onto its port side.
What was that? I don't know.
Dmitri and his comrade find a man in a lab coat.
What are you doing here?
I need antidote. The driver, he injected me with virus. Look!
Dmitri, where would he get the virus?
The one we left in doctor's surgery. Please, I need antidote. I'm sick.
Calm down. You're not sick. You have 4 hours before the virus is active. You know that. You worked on creating it.
Dmitri points a gun at the doctor.
Open the fridge.
I'm telling you.
He pistol whips him.
He's beneath you. Open the fridge. Open the fridge.
The doctor complies, revealing 2 vials of antidote.
Insurance policy. How many do you have?
2 doses. Enough for Tipper and myself.
Dmitri guns down his comrade.
Tipper's policy canceled. There is one for me. And I want it now. Come on.
Approaching, Frank collects his fallen suit jacket.
Let's do it.
He tears open the chamber's plastic wall.
Let's not.
Who are you? Right. There is enough for 2 of us.
You don't need it.
But you injected me.
With water.
I'm not sick.
Not sick.
Water.
Water.
Dmitri fires and misses. Then Frank pulls the gun's assembly from the barrel and jabs it into Dimitri's neck, sending him crashing into a shelf unit.
A problem is solved. 1 dose for each of us.
It's not for us.
Ah, 1 for you, 1 for the child. Your devotion is touching.
My patience is about to run out.
As the doctor makes a break for it, Frank hurls a scalpel into his torso.
Tell me about the virus.
Okay. What do you want to know?
Everything. For starters, what is it?
It's a recombinant retroimmune double polymorphing effluent. The child will die. Anyone he breathes on will die. And then it's over.
What do you mean it's over?
The virus is designed to go inert after 24 hours.
Thanks for the lesson.
Frank aims a gun.
Now give me the vials.
You really want to play superhero, don't you? Well, let's see if you can fly.
The doctor flings the vials through a window, crashing through after them. Frank snags them in slow motion, then thuds onto the roof of a taxi passing below. As the cab brakes, he rolls off to the street, dropping the vials. He spots 1 vial in a lane of heavy traffic. Standing in the double yellow lines, he darts out and grabs it. Frank leaps up, clearing the bumpers of 2 vehicles that collide head-on. Seeing the vial's crushed glass, he hurls it into the street and hops down from the car's mangled hoods. 1 driver gets out of his vehicle.
You okay?
I'm okay.
Frank spots the other vial rolling across the asphalt as a semi-truck approaches. He hurries forward, clambering onto the roof of the stopped vehicle. In slow motion, he vaults up and lands in the street. The semi-driver brakes to a stop, the front tire inches from the antidote vial in Frank's grasp. Getting to his feet, Frank tosses and catches the intact vial before stepping away. Now, with a torrential downpour soaking the street, Frank trudges down the center lines. Blood stains his white dress shirt, while his features bear a resolute expression. He strides away from the crash scene, leaving burning wreckage in his wake. Arriving at his parked car, he opens the trunk, revealing a case of several weapons. He tosses his suit jacket in the trunk, followed by his necktie. Ripping off his shirt, he grabs a packaged dress shirt, tie, and jacket from the trunk before shedding it. Now, the setting sun casts a warm glow around a marina. As Jack lies in bed at home, a doctor listens through a stethoscope.
There's nothing to worry about. It's just a simple viral infection combined with the stress of what happened. It should pass in a day or two. I gave him something to help him sleep. Call me if anything arises.
Thank you.
Thank you, doctor.
Jefferson dabs his son's face with a cloth.
You know, Audrey, all this is... Well, it's made me realize what a fool I've been. With Jack. And with you.
Are you okay?
Mr. Billings, we're running late.
I'll be right out. I'd like to come by after the conference. Check on Jack. Check on you.
Audrey nods.
Good. I'll see you soon. They're here if you need them.
He lays his hand on hers for a moment, then gets off the bed. Audrey leans down and kisses Jack's forehead. Later, she grabs something from the fridge and finds a marshal hovering nearby.
Are you all right, ma'am?
I'm fine.
Audrey heads upstairs and answers her phone as another marshal stands waiting.
Hello?
It's me.
You're okay, Mrs. Billings?
Going to your bedroom.
Hi, Susan.
She pads into a room, unnoticed. Frank steps from behind the door.
I'm alone. Where are you, Frank?
Turn around.
Audrey embraces him. They duck out of sight. The marshal checks inside, then leaves and shuts the door.
Frank, you were wrong. It was a kidnapping. Jack is fine.
Jack's been infected with a deadly virus, Audrey. Now anyone who comes into contact with him will die.
What are you telling me? Are you telling me that my son is gonna die?
No, he's not.
Frank holds up the vial of antidote.
Once incubated, the virus becomes airborne, so anyone he breathes on gets infected. His son was a weapon. The target is his father.
Jefferson? But why?
Because of the conference. It's the only logical answer. Every drug enforcement agency in the hemisphere in one room. Your husband breathes, the room dies.
Frank draws the antidote into a syringe and taps Jack's arm.
Trust me, Audrey.
She lowers her gaze and bites her lip as Frank injects her son. Jack blinks but remains asleep.
Can you get to him?
What are you gonna do?
Find the guy responsible. He has more of this. For you and everybody else.
For you now.
Outside, a plainclothesman shines his flashlight toward the house. Discovering a door's broken window, he shows himself inside. On a wall, he sees a broken keypad hanging from its wires, then lifts his handset.
We have a guest.
Frank feels Audrey's face.
You're burning up.
Okay. You gotta go. Go.
He gets up. Two marshals arrive outside the room.
Don't move!
Frank bashes one with a stand lamp. He cuffs the other's wrist with the man's own handcuffs. Frank pummels the first guy as he gets up, then cuffs both marshals together. Seeing more arriving, Frank vaults over a railing and kicks one. As Frank grapples with the second, his cuffs fly into the air. Frank snags the cuffs and shackles the pair together. He boots a newcomer, then the pair he just cuffed, before descending the stairs. Now, a police escort accompanies a stretch limo as it pulls to a stop in a hotel carport. The limo's back door opens. Jefferson emerges, smiling and waving into the distance, then coughing into his hand. A colleague ushers him through the hotel kitchen.
Is the governor here?
Everybody's gonna be here. The governor, delegates from all over the world.
Just a sec. Hello?
You can't go to the conference.
Is everything all right?
To give him a deadly virus.
Audrey, I can't hear you. I'm inside.
No, I've got it, and so do you.
Audrey, I can't hear you.
Their plan is to infect everyone at the conference.
I'm gonna have to call you back.
Jeff.
He disconnects and slumps against the wall.
Mr. Billings, you all right?
I'm all right. Come on, let's go.
You sure?
Yeah.
Okay. He follows his colleague down a corridor. Elsewhere, with his car parked at a curb, Frank crosses a street. He stops by a payphone and lifts the receiver. At the police precinct, Tarconi dozes on a couch. Reaching into his pocket, he grabs his phone.
Anna.
You still a guest of the government?
They gave me the five-star accommodation. Let me guess.
You need my help?
You know the computer.
It's practically my pillow.
So, how do you want to start?
I don't know. I have nothing.
My favorite type of investigation.
Tarconi sits in the bullpen.
Let's see.
Elsewhere, the kidnapper watches Jefferson on TV.
Now, I'd like to take this opportunity to introduce you to my delegates.
Breathe. That's right. Breathe, my friend. Breathe.
The blonde woman sits nearby.
Tomorrow, once these bastards are out of the way and their cooperation agreements are dead and buried, you know what your biggest problem is going to be?
What?
Counting the money.
They touch glasses and sip drinks.
Can't wait for tomorrow.
Aye, aye, aye.
In the bullpen,
it's easier with you.
A series of photos appears, including the dark-haired kidnapper.
Gianni Cellini.
He hires himself out to anyone looking to make trouble, like the Red Brigade, the Shannon Path.
Elsewhere in the precinct.
Someone accessed the database on the 15th floor.
That's Gonzalez. He's on vacation.
Two cops hurry to their feet.
He was behind the hostage taking of the Republic ministers in Geneva. That was a nice piece of work.
They search the bullpen. Meanwhile, a police cruiser pulls up to Frank's empty car.
Give me an address.
Miami is Thailand, but he can drive number
26900.
We found the car.
One great cop, Tarconi.
Thank you for the compliment.
Now I'm going back to sleep.
The payphone receiver dangles from its cord. Tarconi spots the cops in the bullpen.
Maybe not.
In an alley, a taxi breaks for Frank.
Oh, my God, man! Move on, the witch!
Move over.
What do you? Stop!
The taxi drives off with Frank behind the wheel. Elsewhere, Audrey sits with Jack.
Mommy?
You feeling better?
A little bit.
Why don't you try to go back to sleep, okay?
He shuts his eyes, and his mom pats his chest. She steps from the room.
Man, are you all right?
She collapses, knocking over a table lamp. At a reception, Jefferson smiles and raises a glass. He takes a sip, then coughs into a handkerchief. As he collapses, the view switches to him sinking onto a gurney before it's loaded onto an ambulance. It drives off through the hotel carport, followed by a squad car, as news people clamor nearby. They watch as Jefferson's colleague slumps to the asphalt in distress. Now an aerial view recedes from a purple-lit modern high-rise to take in a panoramic vista of the Miami skyline. Seen from a distance on a bridge that spans a waterway, the taxi drives through light traffic. As night turns to day, the image dissolves to a bare, outstretched leg marked with a death by rabbit tattoo above the knee. Lying on her naked belly, the blonde woman opens her eyes groggily and smiles to herself. She gets up from the bed, covering herself with a dark, lacy wrap. Arms crossed, she gazes down through a glass wall at Gianni, who sips from a coffee cup in a room below.
Okay, do it.
Gianni makes a fist as the doctor taps a vial of antidote hung from an IV pole. The blonde woman comes downstairs to the living room to find Gianni seated in his robe.
What are you doing?
You know, last night got me thinking. How do you transport the antidote safely?
We need something that won't break. Something that can't be stolen. Something totally secure.
Me. The taxi crashes through a glass wall on the estate. Gianni watches a camera feed on a monitor.
Impressive. Get dressed.
He presses a comm.
Stop him.
The cab swerves to a stop on the grounds.
He's your friend?
Not yet.
Frank shoves the dreadlocked cabbie back in his seat as thugs open fire with automatic rifles. A back door swings open. Then the shooters make their way over.
Where'd they go?
The garage.
They look down a crawl hole.
I'm out of ammo.
Me too.
So am I. Where are the reloads?
The garage.
In the garage.
Check the house! Go, go, go!
As a henchman starts to unlock the door, Frank kicks his hand, breaking the key in the lock. As others pursue Frank, the cabbie peeks from inside a yellow convertible. The henchmen grab fire axes, swords, and other weapons, surrounding Frank from all sides. As two foes lunge, Frank kicks over a shelf unit, dropping them. Ducking an axe swing, Frank fights off a swordsman. He bounces a fire extinguisher off a guy's head. Grabbing onto pipework like monkey bars, Frank kicks a guy away, flips around, and boots a guy on the other side. Ducking and feinting, Frank holds his enemies at bay, stomping his foot on one guy's sword. He gets a thug in an arm lock and elbows his face, then boots another. Frank hangs from the pipework by one leg, the other kicking assailants away from both directions. Thugs swing wildly with their axes, breaking a pipe and filling the garage with thick exhaust. Then flying bodies fall to the floor. The haze dissipates, revealing Frank holding a long pipe while facing down a second group of adversaries. He whacks one on the head, then nimbly manipulates the pipe like a bow staff, pummeling and jabbing his foes. He bars the pipe around a guy's throat and spins him till they're both back to back. The thug gasps in the chokehold while Frank stares down the others. Finally letting go, Frank takes them on, one by one. A thug attacks from behind, and without looking, Frank blocks his axe swing, then kicks him down. Frank kicks a dumpster at a guy, who tumbles headfirst inside. He gets the pipe between a guy's legs and tosses him in too, then forces a third into the dumpster. Boosting himself up on the metal pipe, Frank kicks a swordman inside the dumpster, then shuts the lid. The cabbie watches.
What you want me to do?
Keep the meter running.
The cabbie rubs the convertible's door as Frank leaves.
Don't worry, baby. You're safe now. You're safe. You're so beautiful. Remind me of my yellow Pum Pum Rider.
Frank opens the stairwell door. A thug aims point blank at his head. Another comes downstairs, pistol trained. Gripping a handgun, Frank stretches his arm out to the side, turns the weapon and lets go. The closer thug watches it fall. Frank kicks the thug's gun away, and it strikes his comrade. Frank wraps a fire hose around the first guy's neck and yanks him headfirst into a glass case. He lassos the second guy's ankle with the nozzle end of the hose and drags him downstairs. Frank fights off more thugs, tugging one with the hose and backflipping him onto his belly. Frank lashes the hose around some scaffolding. Flinging the nozzle into the air, he kicks it straight into a thug's crotch. Frank uses the hose like a slingshot to whack another henchman in the face with a paint can. He cracks his makeshift bullwhip at another guy, sending him tumbling, then tosses the hose over two ceiling ducts. Using the hose to fight off more assailants, Frank dispatches them with punches and kicks. Another guy charges and winds up trapped by the hose. Frank moves a wall lever. The limp hose goes rigid as it fills. It pulls taut, yanking the trapped thugs in different directions. A ladder falls atop the last guy. Frank retrieves his handgun from the floor. Later.
Don't move.
He aims at Gianni.
Oh, Mr. Driver.
Blow you into tomorrow.
But then I bleed what you came for all over the floor. You wouldn't want this, would you? Not after you worked so hard trying to get to the antidote.
He gestures off.
Take a good look, Frank Martin.
Frank eyes the vial.
I'm a cure for what ails you. I'm the only cure for what ails you. I am the antidote. Well, nice try. I'm impressed. Didn't give you enough credit. Took more than a driver to figure this out.
I haven't figured it all out yet.
Perhaps I can help you. What part are you a little, how you say, thick on?
You. Why?
Oh, that's the easy part. It's a business deal, pure and simple. I'm for hire to the highest bidder. And in this case, the highest bidder was the Colombian cocaine cartels that wanted this pesky lawman off their backs.
You really think killing all these politicians is going to make things easier for them?
That's not my problem. I was hired to do a job, I did the job, like you. Just my pay is better. My hair and my suit, too.
Frank aims at the blonde, who comes downstairs with two guns.
Oh, Lola. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have a plane to catch. Kill him. Ciao, ciao.
Gianni steps away, leaving Lola and Frank in a standoff.
Don't even blink.
What's in this for you?
Pleasure.
She draws closer.
I'm killing you.
They grapple, weapons discharging over each other's shoulders and blasting the furnishings. Frank winces as she presses a gun barrel to his cheek. The ensuing struggle sends them both flying back. Lola kicks a bowl of onions on a counter at Frank. Grabbing hold of a beaded curtain, she swings across the living room, planting a heel in his back. As Lola swings again, Frank dodges and gathers up strands of the beads in one arm. Hanging upside down, Lola rights herself. She faces Frank, wiping her mouth with her hand. As she swings again, Frank boots her, sending her flying off. Gazing across the room, he sees Lola impaled on a display featuring rows of sharp spikes. He turns away and lifts his gaze. Peering through the window of a hovering helicopter, Gianni gestures to Frank in the house. The chopper flies off. In the garage, Frank gets behind the wheel of a high-end black convertible. While he speeds through the grounds of Gianni's estate, the chopper flies over downtown. Out on the street, Frank shifts gears as the speeding car weaves around traffic. Glancing over sharply, Frank locates the aircraft in the sky. He makes a sharp turn, cutting off several lanes of traffic as the convertible zips toward a toll road. Ignoring a lowered barrier gate, Frank drives straight under it. Seeing the chopper flying away from the highway, he accelerates, overtaking other vehicles. Frank takes another look skyward and sees several other choppers. A picture-in-picture view shows a newscaster.
We're coming to you live from the Key Biscayne Causeway, where at least 10 police cars are in hot pursuit of a stolen red pickup truck.
Frank speeds up and swerves around the pursuing police cruisers.
Oh my, this is just nuts. Jim, are you getting that? There's another car that is swaying past the police.
In the precinct, officers watch, along with Tarconi.
So Mitch can drive.
Yes, he can.
On a tree-lined thoroughfare, the black convertible thunders forward. Spotting Gianni's helicopter above the tree line, Frank leaves vehicles in his wake. An aerial view shows him threading the needle through traffic up ahead. As the chopper veers off from the main road, the car changes course. The helicopter descends near a waiting private jet. Frank swerves the car to a stop across the way. Seeing Gianni getting out, he circles around, then drives forward. Gianni starts up the boarding stairs. The convertible speeds over from a paved road, Frank keeping the taxiing plane in his sights. A mustached pilot sits in the cockpit.
We have clearance for takeoff, Mr. Cellini. Sit back, enjoy your flight, and we will be in Colombia before you know it.
Gianni glances out a window, a drink in hand. Approaching the plane from the rear, the convertible pulls up alongside the craft. Frank studies the port side of the fuselage, as well as the landing gear. He steers the car behind the plane's rear wheels and speeds up as the pilot pushes a control forward. Eyes narrowed in steely determination, Frank drives on while the plane starts to leave the runway. As the jet flies above a huge sign reading Miami, the convertible barrels straight through the sign, exploding in a fireball of mangled metal. On board, Gianni's drink jostles in his hand. The pilot checks controls.
We have a problem with the landing gear. It won't come up. I'm turning back to land.
And we fly with a problem?
Yeah, theoretically.
Then you land when we get to Colombia.
He addresses the co-pilot.
Let's see if you can lift it manually.
Sorry for the inconvenience, Mr. Cellini. Nothing to worry about.
He opens the door to a compartment. Frank snaps his neck and enters the cabin.
Sorry. Flight's been canceled.
I'm sorry to inform you that you have been canceled. Have a seat.
Gianni draws a gun, and Frank sits.
Relax.
Gianni slides him a glass.
Drink something. Let's get to know each other.
I think I know everything I need to know.
Frank kicks over the table between them, disarming his foe. He hurls Gianni onto a row of seats and pins him down. The criminal slugs him, freeing himself, then straddles Frank, who punches him away. Gianni retrieves his dropped gun. As the pilot looks over, it discharges, striking him. Frank disarms Gianni again. As they scuffle, the plane rolls wildly through the skies. The pilot slumps in his seat, and the jet does a barrel roll. Floating in the cabin, Frank pins Gianni to a wall and slugs him in the gut. As Gianni grips his throat, the pilot slumps to the other side, sending the jet into another barrel roll. Frank breaks free and grabs hold of his adversary. They float weightlessly around the cabin, locked in a tight clinch. They go rolling across the floor, then up toward the ceiling once more. The out-of-control jet rolls on, while the adversaries struggle to maintain their footing. The plane yaws and stabilizes, with its nose at a downward angle. As Gianni and Frank size each other up, the jet pitches forward. Gianni's gun slides along the floor toward Frank. The pilot slumps back, pulling lifelessly on the yoke and sending the craft into a sudden steep ascent over open water before it plummets. Seeing his gun sliding back across the floor to him, Gianni grins. As he grabs it, Frank kicks it from his hand. Frank alternates, socking him in the face and midsection. Lifting his leg high, he boots Gianni in the chest, sending him flying across the cabin. Gianni sinks down. A view over the water shows the plane hurtling forward at a downward trajectory. Frank leaps toward the back of the cabin in slow motion as a wall of water breaches the cockpit, then all goes black. A flurry of bubbles roils up in the inundated cabin. Seen underwater, the jet sinks in the greenish murk, its tail broken off from the fuselage. Frank surfaces in the cabin in shoulder-high water. He goes to check on Gianni, who bolts up and strangles him with an oxygen mask tube dangling near a seat. Wincing in agony, Frank manages to get a hand on Gianni's head. He dunks him in the water and drives his elbow into Gianni's back before whipping the oxygen mask off. Gianni sinks below the surface and glances around. Frank swims over and drapes a life vest over his head. He pulls his foe closer, then pulls an emergency exit handle. Frank removes a square hatch and steers Gianni outside the fuselage. Frank follows him out, then inflates his enemy's life vest. He swims away from the wreck with his captive in tow. A bird's eye view shows Gianni and Frank's heads breaking the water's surface. Several boats converge on the rescue scene, and a helicopter circles past. Later, on dry land, Frank carries a bouquet of white flowers down a hospital corridor. He straightens his tie, then pauses at the closed door of the patient's room and peers in the window.
5 points. What has eyes but no ears, skin but no hair? It's white inside and brown outside.
Jack sits on the edge of his mom's bed.
A worm?
Wrong. Dad?
A caterpillar.
Wrong.
A potato.
Frank turns away from the window as a nurse approaches.
May I help you?
I was just leaving.
Frank places the bouquet on her cart.
Wrong.
Snake.
Wrong.
The nurse wheels her cart into the Billings' room.
Yeah.
A hot dog.
Seeing the flowers, Audrey smiles wistfully. In the parking lot, Frank makes his way to his car as an ambulance approaches. As he gets behind the wheel, Tarconi stirs in the passenger seat.
That's West Vest.
Yeah. Didn't want you to miss your plane.
That's very thoughtful of you.
They put on their seatbelts. Sporting a taxi sign above its windshield, the yellow convertible stops at a curb, and the dreadlock cabbie gets out. He slaps hands with another guy as a group gathers around.
You won't believe what happened to me last night, girl.
In an airport terminal, Tarconi sets his belongings down to be scanned.
I have something for you. Figure since you never got to the beach.
I know, water is water, sand is sand, here, there, it's all the same.
Frank hands him a postcard of South Beach.
Thank you, Frank. It was an interesting vacation.
What more could one ask for?
Au revoir, Frank.
Au revoir, my friend. Have a good flight.
I doubt it. As I said, it is all headwinds. I guess we can't have everything we wish for, can we?
No, we can't.
Tarconi waves as he steps away. Now, Frank gets into his car. He reaches toward the dashboard. He lifts the phone to his ear.
Yeah.
I'm looking for a transporter.
Frank shifts his steely gaze forward.
I'm listening.
Cut to black.
I need a little more.
This film has been described by Deluxe, with funding by Walt Disney Studios, voice by Jedediah Barton.